Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
You're listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 61 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can follow us on X at Emerald Flow Show and listen to us on all of your favorite podcasting apps. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. You can go to voicesofwrestling.com/donate to donate to the show if you're feeling generous. I'm Gerard here with Paul, and Paul, I have never had more anticipation to record an episode than this one.
Yeah, a lot happened in just a week, so we decided to just real quick come back, because otherwise the next episode would have been like 6 hours long.
Yeah, and there would probably have been more things even happening if we had left it.
Yeah, that too.
So, and I think, you know, you're busy this week. I'm a little busy too. So we just had to get this out of the way. And yes, we're going to drive right into it. All Japan Pro Wrestling Dream Power Series on March 30th at Otis Ward City Gym in front of 2,057 fans, which I got to say, I was hoping for at least 2,000 and they did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they kind of reached like what I wanted them to get to. So that's good. I mean, we won't really have a number to compare this to for a while, because now this building is going to be closed for like, what, 3 years?
Oh, is it that long? Oh, wow. Okay.
It was a while. It was definitely a weirdly long time.
I thought it was 3 years. Okay.
That's... I don't remember, but it's definitely closed for like a while.
So. That hurts All Japan, because a lot of the other venues in the area, like in Yokohama, are bigger than Ota Ward.
Yeah. So,
it's going to force them to maybe run bigger buildings for bigger shows. We'll see, like they are with the Buntai in the Champion Carnival. So we'll see how that is heading. Paul, I have to admit, I watched this show live and I didn't realize that the actress match was starting 20 minutes before the actual show started. So I didn't see it. And I haven't had time to go back and watch it.
It was fine. Okay. It was, and also the fact that it was definitely noticeable that it started 20 minutes before the show, because it was very empty. like people were still filing in and they were like basically doing their dances in front of like, I'm not gonna say it wasn't even like half the crowd was there yet, and the match was fine.
Okay. Yeah, they have gotten better in terms of what they said, because in those shows in January did really not help their first impression.
No, they didn't really like come out strong. I think they didn't put their best foot forward there, but they have gotten better since then.
So we started off the first official match of the show at the Junior Special 6-Man Tag Match. Kaz Hayashi, Seki Yoshioka, and Fuminori Abe defeated Naruki Doi, Sego Tachibana, and Ryo Inoue in 9 minutes and 30 seconds when Hayashi used the final cut on Inoue. This was a solid junior opener, good action. And honestly, I thought this was like Kaz Hayashi's farewell match in All Japan before his retirement. But we'll get to that a little later.
Mm-hmm. Also, in this match, the new head of the dojo as well.
Oh, yes. It was announced that Inoue is now basically, I would say, I'm not sure. I guess he's the head of the dojo, or is he really like the main day-to-day drill sergeant, basically?
I mean, you watched the whole like video that they did from the tryouts, right?
Yes,
you didn't.
The trial videos. Yes, I did.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was already doing a lot of stuff in there. Like it was him and Yuma. And I guess maybe now he's like taking over like whatever Yuma was doing as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that's a good sign. And we've got those two guys that they took in whose names I can't even remember at this point. But I guess they'll probably be debuting probably this summer or in the fall.
Yeah, and they might have another, but they are having another person joining them as well, but more on that later.
Yes. Second match of the show, Takao Mori and Kuma Rashi defeated Kono and Toshizo in 9 minutes and 25 seconds with the Axe Bomber from Mori on Toshizo. Paul, I got to admit, I like this match more than I thought I would. It was fun, you know?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Don't think it was anything special, but I mean, I actually even liked some of the interference stuff, like, because I feel like Kuma Rashi actually kind of wasn't quite prepared to get hit by the powder, because he was very audibly coughing. So I think he just kind of got like hit right in the throat with it.
Yeah. So, but it was like, you know, but like, yes, there was the powder spot and Taru was all around the place, but it actually didn't get ridiculous with like refs getting pulled out or anything like that, and the baby faces won. And then next up was the Road to the Champion Carnival 8-man battle royale with Ken Miyahara, Ren Ayabe, Kuroshi Tokyo Japan, Shotaro Shino, Hartley Jackson, Hokuto Omori, Yuma Aoyagi, Ryuki Honda. So I mean, this was okay, so they time these things so weird, because when people make their entrances, the clock is ticking. So basically, when Kento enters, basically someone's ready to enter as soon as he gets, by the time he gets into the ring.
To be fair, I like that as a bit. They did that as well during the Fuji anniversary show as well, where Kento, I think they actually have a timer where they do need to be in the ring before the next guy comes out. Mm-hmm. Because on the Fuji show, at least, they did the bit where Kento basically was still like putzing around outside while they were already doing the countdown for the next person to come in, and then he basically rolled in like at the last second. And he kind of got close here as well, because I think he like rolled into the ring with like 10 seconds left on the countdown or something.
Yeah, it was only like 1-minute intervals. So, I mean, you know, standard Japanese battle royal, but then, you know, it came down to Ren Ayabe and Kento, and then Ren and Kento had, you know, a decent little back and forth. And then obviously Ren got eliminated by a shutdown German suplex, not thrown over the top. But then, and because obviously, you know, we talked about this, there was something brewing between Kento and Ren. And Ren got on the mic and said he wanted to join All Japan. And then Kento got him one of those tracksuit jackets, and Ren put on the jacket, the ill-fitting jacket. And he's joined All Japan, and he's now a contracted wrestler, which is interesting. But we'll talk about this more later, and maybe some of the drama that started early this year is coming to a close.
One thing though that this match made me realize is, or the aftermath rather, is how much of a nightmare it has to be for Ren Ayabe to go clothes shopping in Japan. Because, like, that can't, like, because he isn't just, like, tall by, like, Japan standards. He's, like, tall by, like, Western standards as well.
Oh, yeah, he'd have to go to, like, a special, like, big and tall store here.
I don't know if those exist in Japan even.
Do big and tall stores even exist in Europe?
No, I know that they're, like, a thing in America, but I've never seen one here.
They have them in Canada too. I always thought that was a more of a North American thing.
Yes.
So then we have for the All Asia Tag Team title, and it was I thought it was going to be a current blast death match, but it was just an electric death match because they didn't even go to all the trouble to setting up like they do for those other ones. Sort of like, let's just get this over with.
Yeah.
They still had the bat, but they didn't do all the barbed wire stuff. Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura defeated Atsushi, Onita, and Toy in 10 minutes and 32 seconds with the sandwich electric blasting bat from Sato and Dan on Toy. The champions fall on their first defense, and now Sato and Dan win the titles for the second time, and they're the 123rd All-Asia Tag Team Champions. I mean, this wasn't good, but it wasn't as bad as some of the other Onita matches.
Yeah, it was still not great though. And I just realized that I'm just really over the bad stuff as well.
Oh yeah. Of course, Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura came out looking like they were in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, what the fuck was up with that look?
I don't know. It was just a gimmicky thing. But I mean, does it really matter? No.
No. I mean, it's whatever. I just realized that I was just like been doing this since like 2016 on and off in All Japan with the like current, like bringing in Onita and having him like do his matches, right? Because like I looked at it and like I think the first time they did it was like at the like Sumo Hall show in 2016 where Kento beat Suwama, and they were doing it there already. So I just hope that this is finally just over now and he can just go away.
Yep. I have a feeling that Dan and Sato will have a much longer run with the All Asia Tag titles this time.
Yeah, hopefully. But then again, it's also the All Asia Tag titles, so they might also just lose it on the next defense.
That's true. Then next up for the PWF World Junior Heavyweight Championship, Rising Hayato defeated Musashi in 14 minutes and 55 seconds with the Sid Vicious to make his first defense. I see a lot of opinions all over the place on this match. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I did not love it. It was pretty good, not great. There was some shakiness. They looked like they were on different pages at times, a little sloppiness. Mm-hmm. But I think there was like a good match in there still at the end.
I actually fully agree on that. It was pretty much going to be my take. I was going to be interested to see like what your take was going to be. But yeah, we're in full agreement here. I did like the finishing sequence. I thought that was pretty good.
Yes. I mean, Musashi managed to get a lot of pops and crowd heat going in that finishing sequence with those near
falls. Yeah, absolutely. Also, oof, that second Sid Vicious. Jesus Christ. The pile driver. Like that second pile driver in the finishing sequence before the Sid Vicious. That looked real rough. He dropped the on the top of his head there.
Those like inverted pile drivers always look sketchy, like whenever Dan takes one.
Yeah, I mean, Dan is just like, yeah, I'm just gonna pretend I broke my neck.
Yeah, but Hayato's reign continues. And he called out Kaz Hayashi to be the next challenger. I could see that happening on the Carnival Final show or something like that. Or on one of the weekends during the Champion Carnival.
Yeah, you'd fill that up. And I think that's a nicer goodbye to Kaz than just having him in a random six-man.
Mm-hmm, for sure. For the World Tag Team titles, Jun Saito, Rei Saito defeated Suwama and Hideki Suzuki in 17 minutes and 18 seconds with the Psycho Break. From June on Suwama. Also note that June is facing Suwama on the final night of the carnival. So the champions fail in their second defense, and the Saitos are now two-time champions and the 99th World Tag Team Champions in All Japan. I mean, it was what it was. I mean, it wasn't great, but I didn't think it was like horrible either. I thought it kind of got pretty decent towards the end. And of course, there was Taru shenanigans. The members of Voodoo Murders came out with them in this match and everything like that.
Yeah. I mean, the match itself, it was just kind of there, but I also didn't really expect much since, yeah, the Suwama Hideki team just, it hasn't worked. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
Like, it just hasn't really worked. I think on paper, it looks like a team that could be good, but there's just something missing from it. There's just no spark. And I would actually say that the side just carried this match.
in some ways, they did. And then, of course, after the match, Paul, we were kind of right. The Voodoo Murders did disband.
Yeah.
But not They're quite gone. The evil we were expecting.
The evil is defeated by winning the titles, question mark?
Yeah. But it was more like Taru just coming out and saying, okay, we don't need to do this anymore. And basically, Suwama came out and reconciled with the Saitos and everything like that. So it didn't quite end as we thought it would, though.
Also, shoot trash unmasking Ryuji Hijikata like that.
Yes, Ryuji Hijikata, or Toshizo took his mask off to reveal Ryuji Hijikata, who rested on the last All Japan show before this one.
I did love that there were genuinely people in the crowd that were like, oh my god. Like, come on, man.
Yes, that is so funny. And then we go to the main event. What by this point, I was like, how long is this main event going to go? Because this was moving pretty briskly for Ota Ward gym show. Because some of those go like 4 hours.
Yeah, this was a really fast show. I was surprised. Like, I looked at the file as well and was like, that's not that long.
Yeah. In the main event for the Triple Crown, Yuma Anzai defeats Katsuhiko Nakajima in 20 minutes and 16 seconds with a German suplex. Nakajima fails on his fifth defense, and Yuma Anzai is the 72nd Triple Crown champion. We'll talk about the match first. I actually did quite like this match. I thought Nakajima was great here, just dominating Anzai and going after the arm with the kicks. I thought Anzai's selling was top-notch here. Now, I guess what's going to be controversial is the finish, because it was basically like Nakajima went for the vertical spike, and then, you know, Anzai floated over and escaped, hit the jumping knee, and then a German suplex to win the match. And, you know, Nakajima sort of gets up right afterwards and has that smirk on his face as he's walking down the aisle. Paul, what did you think of the finish?
I didn't like the finish. I thought, actually, until then, I thought there was a bunch of stuff they did that actually put over Anzai well, like him surviving in the arm submission and everything. And then the finish, yeah, like, it was so fast. Like, there was no, like, it's hard to even call it a comeback, because it's literally two moves and he wins.
Well, I mean, that's what they were going for, no question. I mean, it was, I think it really was, I mean, as maybe as ridiculous or pretentious as it sounds, this was supposed to evoke like Jumbo versus Misawa, because, you know, Misawa gets the flash pin after, you know, escaping from a suplex attempt from Jumbo, right? So it was supposed to be like a, oh, wow, like, who saw this coming type thing, right? And, you know, that's obviously, you know, going to be debatable. What about Nakajima smirking on the way out? I think it's a little different than what happened with Muto after Kaito finally beat him, though.
Yeah, I was more reminded of like Austin Aries actually. But yeah, I don't know. It like that whole like put an even more like weird spin on it. I mean, we'll see if like I think it very highly depends on whether or not Nakajima is done.
Yeah.
If Nakajima is just done after this, then I think it was kind of shitty of him to like walk out of the ring smirking.
Okay, so next question, is Nakajima done?
I genuinely cannot make a statement on that right now until after WrestleMania week, basically.
Well, I mean, So both in Nikon Sports and Tokyo Sports say he's done. But again, I mean, that's, you know, whatever that those are.
Yes. Right? I mean, the thing is, because there is an NXT show on there.
Mm-hmm.
So if he, like, there is, I mean, if he's leaving, like, I, the only fair, the only, like, location I can see him popping up is on that show.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I don't think he's done.
Is he going to, what about New Japan?
I could see that happening, but what, where do you put him right now in New Japan? Like, it's kind of a weird spot to debut someone as well.
In Shingo Gun.
I guess if that is like a thing that is actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, my philosophy on this is he's not done until he shows up somewhere else.
Yes. Oh, no, no, absolutely. Yeah. Until he shows up somewhere else, I would still, like, because there's still too many things that are open for him in All Japan.
Yeah.
For him to be fully done, right? Because he, Kento didn't get his win back. Yuma didn't get his win back. Although I feel like Yuma might not, and that's fine too, but still.
I mean, if he is done, this is like he pulled the wool over their eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there is also still the weirdness of like his apparent involvement still with Simon and Oki, right? Because that's also what the reports are still saying, that he is still very much like tied up with Simon. And Simon seems to be the guy pushing him to go to the US.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, like we were talking as well, right, that it seems like some weirdness that was there earlier in the year has been getting smoothed over, like Ren, like getting signed, and like Suwama still like openly interacting, for example, with like Evolution, or them clearing up that like Suwama does still work with Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if the whole thing of Nakajima, like basically Simon being like Nakajima's agent or whatever, are true, and Simon was the guy behind kind of all of the like All Japan relationships falling apart and like a bunch of people leaving. I mean, I guess you can make a timeline where basically All Japan or Fukuda kind of realizing that he shouldn't be working with Simon once they almost got sued by the Inoki family.
Yes.
And then that whole thing leading to them being like, okay, we don't want to, let's pull the trigger on Anzai, basically, and get the title off of Nakajima at some point, because they kind of had some, like, because they probably already had some defenses lined up, like Ishino and Rei Saito. And then they were like, well, okay, what is like the next defense that we can do to get it off of him? And then they were like, okay, let's just pull the trigger on Anzai maybe.
Yeah.
Like maybe that was planned for like later in the year and not here. And that's why like the whole thing kind of feels weird.
Although looking back, the Anzai on the Fuchi show seems more prophetic even now.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah, no, I mean, like but they put him over massively there.
So it's almost, so it's like, I cannot rule out that they had this plan in January.
I mean, might also be, but again, the one thing that I will still say it is weird is that, or that might indicate that Nakajima is actually done, is the fact that he is not in the carnival.
Yes.
Because remember, like we had the whole discussion about, like, it makes sense to keep Nakajima out of the carnival because he's never lost in a singles match. Whereas once it wasn't sure like who was going to be the other guy coming into the carnival if they add Rei Saito, my argument was like, well, they can put in Nakajima in there if he loses to Anzai, because then like it's no longer a problem for him to lose singles matches.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's not, like now he lost to Anzai and also isn't in the carnival at the same time.
Although I think with this story, it also makes sense if he were to disappear for a couple of months and come back in like June or July. If he's coming back.
True. Because at that point, you can already, like, because you probably don't want this Anzai reign to be very long, right? Probably want to keep this relatively short.
We'll get to that in a second. But I will just say, if Nakajima comes back in 2-3 months with another crazy gimmick, I think that could work too.
I mean, what I'm thinking is basically Anzai, like, gets, like, one title defense, then loses the title to Kento, And then you can do Kento versus Nakajima, and Kento finally gets his win back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go to that. I think maybe we might actually have slightly different opinions on what to do. So Yuma Anzai, at 24 years and 10 months, is the youngest Triple Crown champion in All Japan's history. That's surpassing Kento Miyahara's previous. He was the previous youngest Triple Crown champion. So it's a historic moment. Mm-hmm. Paul, what do you think they got to do with the reign? You got to give him 2 or 3 defenses, in my opinion, especially given the way he won it.
Yes. I mean, if I say short, I think 2 defenses I would give him. Like, you can make that like a pretty, like you can probably like have him defend against like whoever wins the carnival. And then,
yeah, I think that has to happen.
And then like another, like relatively like an older name, like you probably want to feel like a Suwama. Yes, exactly. That's who I'm like aiming for. It's like Suwama or Shuji Ishikawa if he was still there, or maybe he's willing to come back. Who knows? You know, like that's the kind of guy I would have him beat as well. And then he loses it to like Yuma Yoyagi or Kento. It's like whoever, like basically like that's who I would have him lose the title to, so he can like have someone to overcome.
Well, Paul, what do you think of the idea of Kento winning the carnival, losing to Anzai, but then they set up that Aoyagi is the roadblock that he can't overcome instead of Kento?
Yep. I actually like that one as well, because again, he has already beaten Kento. He has never beaten Aoyagi.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a very interesting story, because Yuma is also the younger one, right? And Yuma is in that weird spot,
yeah,
where like Kento is obviously the ace right now still, but Yuma Anzai is very obviously the next ace,
yeah,
but Yuma Aoyagi is also still only like 27, so like he's in that, like basically he's in that spot that Naito was in,
mm-hmm,
where like, well, here's Tanahashi who's the ace, and here's Okada who's the next ace, and what is my role now? So, and I think that's like similar to Yuma Yagi, and making him that roadblock that Yuma Anzai needs to overcome, I think it's like the best spot you can put him in.
I think that's the most best use of Aoyagi at this point. Otherwise, he will get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. No, I do think he needs to like win the Triple Crown back at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's my opinion on where this reign has to go.
I mean, obviously, and I mean, the other thing is, like I said, like you can do Kento versus Nakajima for the title in the summer, but Kento versus Nakajima also doesn't necessarily need the title either.
No.
Like you can just do that as a singles match. Like we know that draws.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. What do you think happens with the Champion Carnival now? Because this has totally flipped.
Yes, it's basically open now. It's basically almost anyone could win now. Because before it was like, well, it's Kento. Whereas now it's like now it's Kento and a bunch of terrible choices. In like once we thought the plan was for Kento to beat Nakajima.
Suwama
now is a reasonable choice, yeah.
Well, yeah, I was skeptical of the people that said it him before, even though they pointed to all of the back and forth with Nakajima. But I think it's actually now more realistic.
I think Hideki has absolutely a very realistic chance of winning now.
Yeah, and it also makes sense because Hideki would then be able to trade wins with Anzai.
Yeah, exactly. So he can
on the final night and then
lose to him in a title match.
Yeah. Who would Hideki be in the finals?
I mean, that's almost like, I mean, they were setting up some stuff with Honda and Yuma. He could beat Honda, who is Anzai's tag partners, to add some more heat to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But think about the building you're putting this in.
Oh, you want to put that's true. Actually, putting Hideki versus Ryuki Honda in the Yokohama Bunta is probably not the best idea.
So you're back to Kento or Yuma Aoyagi.
Basically, yeah.
I mean,
whereas if you do Suwama.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can kind of put anyone in there, really, on the other end.
I don't know about that, but we'll see. So that
it just blows the whole thing wide open, because now it's like Yeah, I mean, now there is a possibility where like Kento or but it could actually like I think it's still probably Kento or Yuma Aoyagi that goes to like the final from their block.
Yeah.
But there is a chance now that it is actually neither of them.
Oh, for sure.
It could be Ren Ayabe.
I still think Ren's got a chance to be Kento on the first night, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially now with him going into the dojo as well.
Yeah. So, I think overall this was an okay show, but actually, I don't think it was like great or anything.
No, there was nothing blow away. Like, it was really kind of lacking that like banger match.
Yeah. And I mean, I see opinions all over the place for the main event, although I did really like it.
I mean, I did like what they were doing there. I felt like if they had given it like an actual, and I get what they were going for, but it did hurt the match quality, right? Like, I did get what they were trying to do here. I just think it hurt the match because if sure. they had given it an actual finishing sequence, I probably would have been like, yeah, this was a great match. But because that just wasn't there, it felt lacking.
Yeah, they were really, they really wanted to go for the shock factor there. Yeah. There were women in the crowd crying.
Mm-hmm.
I read something that there were boos, but I didn't really detect that watching it.
No, I didn't see that either. And said that in
Tokyo Sports.
Yeah, and if it was, it was probably like dedicated like Nakajima fans. Because those were there like for yeah. like for example the Yoyogi show as well, so like those exist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I feel like they probably would have been the ones to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean the other one as well was like the cover that they did with like all the young guys, which
I was gonna say this week's weekly pro wrestling in Japan, the cover is Yuma Anzai, the Saito brothers, Rising Hayato, and Dan with the All Asia tag title, which is why I think that they're going to get a long reign with those titles.
Yeah.
They're really pushing this new generation.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I just had like friends return from Japan like a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had actually been there a couple of days longer, I could have told them, can you bring me that?
Yeah. I would love to get a copy of that actually. So they're going really hard with that. It is sort of crazy to think about, go back even just a couple of years and where we are now. And that coverage sort of just, I think, distilled it for me.
Oh, for sure. Because like I said, I actually looked at the Sumo Hall show from 2016.
Yeah.
At the card from that.
Yeah, even further back.
Yeah, even further back. But I feel like because that was like the actual start of the Kento era.
Yeah.
Right? Because you had the match with Zeus where he won the title, but that was like born out of necessity because Suwama got injured.
Mm-hmm.
So like to me, like the actual start of the like Kento Miyahara era was that Sumo Hall show. And like it's interesting how similar things still are and how different they are at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I would say on that, I would not shock me if the average age on that Sumo Hall show was 45 or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's also like, I mean, in terms of like things staying the same, like you also had Sato in an all-Asia tag. You also had Onita and Sato in an all-Asia tag title match on that show.
Of course.
And you had Jiro winning a Digiora title, which that might be another thing that might happen again this year.
Yeah, actually, it very well may. That's funny.
And more interesting because he run it from Yohei Nakajima, which again might have been the plan originally as well. Until he left.
So that's funny. Okay, so last night we got the card for the New Age Chronicle 4 on April 11th at Shinkiba First Ring singles match: Ren Ayabe versus Ryo Inoue. A 2-on-1 handicap match: Hideki Shrek Sakin versus Imabari Tao Mascaris and Nabe Yakan.
Mm-hmm.
6-man tag match: Shotaro Ashino, Hokuto Omori, and Kuma Arashi versus Ryuki Honda, Dan Tamer, and Fuminori Abe. I hope this is more Kuma.
Oh, yeah. I just book him more. Just That's like my next target for like guy that should get signed by All Japan.
Yeah.
Now that Ayabe is signed.
And then Jun Saito and Rei Saito versus Yuma Aoyagi and Sego Tachibana.
That's going to be comedy, basically, because it's going to be Yuma doing comedy with Sego.
Yes. And this isn't the official match order, but I'm assuming this is now the main event. You've got Triple Crown champion Yuma Anzai versus PWF junior heavyweight champion Rising Hayato.
Yeah, that's going to rock, I think.
This show is almost sold out, I should add, too.
I mean, yeah.
It will buy that.
Because it is in Shinkiba, right? Everybody shooting on Nakajima, where Yuma was like, oh, if Nakajima or Yuma Aoyagi being like, if Nakajima had been champion longer, we would have only been able to run Triple Crown matches.
Yes, I saw
in Shinkiba.
I mean, it's funny, but it's not true. And I never
know. Really... It's so weird that they were like shitting on like Nakajima's drawing ability when he drew some of the best houses. And like,
I mean, this is the biggest evidence that, I mean, this is the first time that you can really say that Nakajima is a draw.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously like he got dealt raw hands because of the situations he found himself in previously, you know?
It almost feels like they wrote out the like details of the story and then he just ended up drawing really well. So it didn't work, but it refused to change course.
Yeah, for sure. So that is All Japan. What do you think? How do you feel about things now?
I'm feeling positive. I actually like all of the champions.
I do feel positive. But I think you don't want to mess this up, though, at the same time.
It is very risky what they're doing right now, yes.
Oh, it is, yes. So that's why I'm like, this guy's got to hold the title for a few months.
Yeah. I mean, like, because you can fuck up Anzai. If you fuck up Anzai, you're kind of screwed.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the other thing as well. Like, yeah, you want him to have a credible reign, but also you don't want it to be like Kaito's first reign.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It got too long. Now, but Kento had a long first reign.
Yeah, but that was different because that was literally like, okay, we just...
What else could you do?
We're dead otherwise, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there was no one else. This is a little different. I mean, you have Yuma Aoyagi. You've got... I think Ashino, he is definitely not a winner out of all of this.
No. But again, it's not very surprising. I mean, you know, actually, because we had the first Yuma reign, right? And the first Yuma reign went 126 days. He got he failed on the seventh defense. Like, I wouldn't go that long on the reign. And I wouldn't put in that many title defenses as well.
No, all you need is two or three.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now one of them has to be a big name.
Yeah.
Or two, you know? Excuse me. But like, I think, yeah, don't go too long with that and end up with the first Kaito reign.
Yeah.
I am very, very cautiously optimistic, but I mean, this could really pay dividends for them if they do this right.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a reason why everybody was like gunning for Anzai, basically.
Update. I found a eBay listing for this magazine and I'm going to buy it.
Nice.
Actually, it's not bad. $18 American, and that includes shipping.
I mean, given that they cost like how many? I don't not.
Oh, they're like 580 yen.
Yeah. To be fair, aren't there? I'm trying to remember if Tokudan actually has old weekly pros on
sale. They do. I mean, everyone seems to post that they've gone in there and buy them.
Yeah, because I was in there as well. I'm just trying to remember where in the store they were. Because I might just risk it and just wait until I'm back there and just buy it used.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. Okay.
Because it will happen sooner or later. It probably won't be this new year, probably, but the next one after that for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is All Japan. So we got some more quick details before we get to Noah. Evolution had their first anniversary show on March 27th on Shinkiba First Ring. I only watched one match from the show, but also it should be notable that Suoma and Dan Tamura worked the show in a tag match. And Hikaru Saito was also in that tag match. It was Suoma and Sushi versus Dan and Saito. What I think was interesting is that there seems to be a situation now where things have been patched up mm-hmm. or in the process of doing so. So there's still, so Suwama is still part of Evolution and Evolution still has a deal with All Japan, but that could be a translation thing.
I mean, if that's the case, do we think like the Aquas girls are for long for All Japan?
I honestly don't know.
Because like what I get from like talking to Joshi people is that Aquas is just utterly toxic to any other like Joshi promotion.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah, I was just talking about this earlier. What's going to happen to the six-man titles?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, whatever. They can just keep them on ice until they need them again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, but, like, I'm just looking at that. Like, they went 21 minutes.
Yeah, well, I watched the match. So, Zones defeated Chi-Chi in 21:54 with the Death Valley Bomb. I mean, it was not bad, okay, given their experience level. A little choppy at times, but I would give them points for trying to pull off a 20-minute match like that with their level of experience.
Yeah, I mean, because I was like, that's longer than a Triple Crown match.
Yes. I was generally enjoyed the match with a few cautions and asterisks. Although I will say, Sonny is not a very good referee at this point, and this is only their like third or fourth match they've reffed. You can't put them in a main event like that at that level of experience as a referee.
That bad?
Not great.
Oof. Okay.
I feel bad saying that. I really do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, I think that was sort of important for that moment, right? At the same time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it's the first anniversary. Yeah.
So, you know, it's worth a watch, I think, just to see where they are at this point. For sure. I did enjoy the match at the end of the day. And so we have more Real 01 details emerging. Still doesn't completely make sense. Nope. But yet, 01 has split into two companies. Real 01 and Tochigi Pro. And this seems to be a cost-cutting measure. Because basically whoever owns 01 was like, you got to stop running Korakin because we're not making money. But the company already had Korakin dates because obviously all the Japanese companies are book them out a year in advance. So basically another LLC or holding company created Tochigi Pro and they're doing the Korakin shows. But for reasons that are unclear, none of the Real 01 old guys like Masato Tanaka are really working those Tochigi Pros.
I mean, probably because they're too expensive. Because it's probably they run them by like a skeleton crew.
Yeah, but like, wasn't Hiromu working one of those shows and like Aja Kong works them?
Or which is always really funny, where like Hiromu is just absolutely not a draw outside of New Japan at all. Like,
no, he doesn't seem to be, actually. So I don't know. But like the way that the article is translated is like they're not allowed to, but like I don't really know, like, because that doesn't make sense because they freelance elsewhere unless there is actually like things going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that still seems to be the thing for me, right? Because this, like, because of this, some things make a bit more sense.
Yes.
But like other things still don't make sense. Like, yeah, like why aren't they allowed to work these shows at all? Where like I think it's still like it's going to be a full split. And I think this whole like Tochigi Pro probably also assumed a lot of like whatever debt existed with the previous 01.
Yeah, that would have to make a lot of sense. Someone's like, got to
think the debt. Exactly. Like they just offloaded all of the debt on it.
Oh, because, well, yeah, because Tochigi is owned by the holding company that owned Zero One originally.
Yeah. And like, that's what, like, that one is going to go bankrupt eventually. And that's why, for example, Zero One is real Zero One is the one that got the Wrestle Universe deal. Like, yes. Right? Because that's still the other part of this that doesn't make sense otherwise. It's like, why is only real Zero One on Wrestle Universe and not like the Tochigi Pro Zero One mm-hmm. as well? Where it makes sense where like, well, you just have this like holding company that has all of the debt that you're just going to like manage down now while it like fulfills contractual obligations that you still had. And then you put all of the new revenue coming in the new company in real Zero One. And then
yeah.
that's eventually going to become the real Zero One.
Yes. Real Zero One also seems to be a favor to some of the people in Real Zero One from mm-hmm. Cyber Fight.
Yeah.
Because also I think Megumi Kudo was also part of Zero One. So yeah. that makes sense.
And we now have...
Oh, yes. I was going to get to that.
World yeah. champion Akitoshi Saito.
Yes. Akitoshi Saito won the World Heavyweight Championship from Chris Weiss.
It's his first ever singles title at age 58.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that show on Wrestle Universe? I haven't actually checked.
I don't think Wrestle Universe is going to put a Yasukuni Shrine show up.
Oh, shit. I didn't realize it was at the War Crimes Shrine.
It was the War Crimes show, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, they're not going to put that up.
But this one had Real Zero One versus Tochigi Pro matches. But again, say what you will about the show, this was something that was contracted out before, definitely.
Yeah.
Right? They had the dates and the agreement to do this, probably with those like Masato Tanaka being on the show. Although, I mean, they let all the Noah guys work this show.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It's weird. I mean, yeah.
So that is the latest on that. I mean, I don't think Saito's gonna hold that title for very long, but we'll see.
Yeah, cut to like a year later and he's still champion.
It's funny though. Yeah, but he's the only guy that Noah would also let get beaten by almost anyone, I think, too.
Yeah, but it's just funny that like the last time we had a Noah champion, like it's kind of like emblematic of just how much like Zero One has even more fallen from like the already low point it was in like last year mm-hmm. or like the year prior, right? Because the last time a Noah guy won this title, it was Takashi Segura, who was, I would say, I don't think it's controversial to say, a bit of a bigger star than Akitoshi Saito.
Yes. And it is just sort of like surprising to me on like how many sort of, how shall I put this? How many contortions are occurring so this company doesn't go under?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, like it's very interesting how Zero One is just not allowed to die. Like almost like it's like a foundational, as if it was in a foundational pillar of like Japanese wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess. Okay, like if I had to find an explanation, I guess maybe to like still get some money towards I don't know, like, because you could just run like charity shows anyway, like you wouldn't yeah. even need to do that.
But do you think it's the whole history of the company with Hashimoto and Otani that
yeah that's the other thing
sort of like oh it's like sort of like gauche if it's allowed to go under?
Yeah, I mean, it's also Japan, which has very much a tendency of just keeping things alive, like keeping companies alive long after they probably should have just been let go, like not just in wrestling terms.
Yeah. Oh yeah, all those banks that just like prop up those companies and everything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also could be people need it for certain money laundering services.
Oh, what? No.
And that's
money
why
laundering. That's why Zero One.
That's why it's not allowed to die. So
no, I'm sure there were like 1,082 people at that war crimes shrine.
Well, there might have actually been. They've definitely like claimed higher for that show, in the past. So you never know. I don't know. Does that show ever air? I could see that.
I don't think anything from there has ever aired, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't ever remember actually like seeing any.
I would just be shocked if it ended up on Wrestle Universe.
Yeah, that would be very weird if it actually ends up on there, because it's very controversial. Like, yes. Maybe just real quick for the people that don't know. So the Yasukuni Shrine is, there's a reason why we refer to it as the War Crimes Shrine, because it's a shrine that is intended to honor all people, all Japanese people that died in a war. And that includes, because there are other shrines in Japan that also honor all of the, or not, that honor people or Japanese people that died in a war, but very specifically excludes people that committed Class A war crimes. Whereas this shrine specifically does not do that, and that's why it's the War Crimes Shrine.
Yes, it is controversial. No one else runs it.
Oh, wait, I actually found one from 2022 that aired on Samurai TV.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well.
Oh, Masaki Tamiya worked at Tro and Inamura.
Oh, okay. Interesting. But yes, it's like the name commemorations involve 1,066 people who were convicted of war crimes, 12 of whom were charged with Class A war crimes.
Yeah, it's bad. It's considered very controversial.
I mean, it's controversial within Japan. It's not just, yeah.
Like, there's a reason why, like, these shows very rarely air, and nobody really likes to talk about them in Japan either.
Yeah. So that is the latest on 01. We move on to Pro Wrestling NOAH on March 31st at Korakuen Hall. They did Star Navigation in front of 1,338 fans, which I got to say, not a bad number these days for them there.
Yeah. No, I don't think you can knock them for that. Like, that's like one of the best numbers in a while, and like one of the best Korakuen numbers this year.
Yeah, for sure. First match, Masa Kinemiya defeated Shuhei Taniguchi in 8 minutes and 18 seconds with a Saito suplex. I like this a lot. It was just the perfect opening match of these two guys pummeling each other.
Yeah. No, just all action. No nonsense, basically.
Then Goshi Ozaki and Atsushi Kotoge defeated Takashi Sugera and Hajime Ohara in 10 minutes and 39 seconds with the kill switch from Kotoge on Ohara. I was kind of surprised at how hard Sugera and Shiozaki went at each other in this for like second match on the show type thing. But again, it was solid.
Mm-hmm. And I really like the Shiozaki Kotoga tag team.
Oh, they're great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say put the tag titles on them, but I think that's for someone else.
Yeah. I mean, you can still put it on them eventually after a while anyway.
Yeah. And then next up, Anthony Green defeated Daiki Inaba in 8 minutes and 42 seconds with a bad-looking face. Again, I thought this was a really solid match. And at this point, I was like, this is turning out to be a nice little show.
Yeah. No, for sure. And also, kind of puts to rest the whole, are Inaba and Kitamiya the next challengers? Like, nope.
No. And then Daga, Yoshinori Ogawa, and Super Crazy defeated Ninja Mac, Alejandro, and Juta Miyawaki in 13:47 with the Diablo Wings from Daga and Miyawaki. This wasn't much to this, and it probably went a little too long.
Yeah. It was just kind of listless, I think.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't really much going, like, it wasn't really sure what they were trying to go for here. Mm-hmm. And it just, yeah, dragged. As well towards the end, where it's like, okay, let's either like give me some sort of story here or just end this match. And then it went on for like 6 more minutes after that.
But things picked up again with Kaito Kiyomiya and Ryohei Oiwa defeating Kenno and Yu Owada in 14:47 with Dr. Brahm from Oiwa on Owada. I mean, this was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, Owada got a lot of shine, but it was like really just like Kiyomiya just like going after Kenneth with a vengeance here and like brawling everything and everything like that, right?
Yeah. No, that was awesome. And I was like, oh man, they're really going into it. And then it made sense later why they were doing that as well.
So they're going to have a match on April 11th at Korakuen. And what's the stipulation? It's like if Kaito wins, then their feud is over forever. And if Kaito wins, they're going to be partners.
Or no, they're in love.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's the weird part. Like, what the fuck are we? So like, okay, so either you're done forever or you become a couple.
I took that in mean tag team.
But that would mean like you break up the Oiwa Kiyomiya team, which is weird. But I like it also doesn't make sense to just end the Kano versus Kaito feud.
Uh-huh. No, it doesn't. If you go back a couple of years, that could have been the feud that was going to carry the company for years.
And it did in a weird way, but also it didn't.
Other things intervened, like a pandemic and Keiji Muto.
Yeah. Like, if that didn't happen, I think we're speaking very differently about Noah.
Yeah, exactly. There was a perfect build for the match.
Yeah.
Next up, Naomichi Marufuji defeated Yuka Sasaki in 14 minutes and 10 seconds with a modified reverse cradle. It was okay. Mm-hmm. I did not love the last couple of minutes. And this was Yuka. Okay, so we'll talk about another Yuka match, but this was Yuka doing too much shoot style.
Yeah.
And mat work.
Yeah. And like the whole like finishing sequence, like the entire like finishing sequence, it was just boring, really.
Yeah. But we'll get back to Sasaki in a second. Mm-hmm. And then in the semi-main event, Hayata, Dragon Bane, and Alpha Wolf defeated Jack Morris, Yohei, and Tadasuke in 10:28 when Hayata used the Samson clutch on Morris. Pretty rare in Noah for a junior to pin a heavyweight. But I thought it was actually a pretty good match, all things considered.
Yeah, and then we had some unintelligible Scottish noises from Jack Morris afterwards.
Yes.
I assume that means he basically challenged Hayata to come for his title.
Yeah, that's what I took it as. I thought they were already building to that.
Yeah, I mean, it depended on me, obviously, but I assume what he spoke was English because it didn't sound like Gaelic. So,
and then in the main event for the GHC heavyweight title, Hiro Dr. Wagner Jr. defeated Jake Lee in 28:25 with a moonsault press. Now, first off, Wagner came out with an incredible Aztec-inspired entrance gear to remove it to reveal his tribute to the German national football team.
Yes, he got very heavily inspired from his trip to Germany.
And then Jake was looking more Mr. Peanut than ever.
And he really has just morphed into like secondary antagonist of like a young adult novel. Like,
yeah, some
like people are saying like a movie, but I'm more thinking like a young adult novel adaptation that airs on Netflix and it's like a series of like 10 episodes a season.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I will say I thought that for the first 20 minutes of this was actually pretty good. I thought they kept my attention. They kept a good pace going to build. I just think once they hit the 28-minute mark and there you go to the finish and stretch, it just... it wasn't bad, and I did like this match, but it just didn't quite reach that like high level I was sort of thought that they could have actually managed to pull off.
Really? Because I think actually in that case, I'm a bit higher on you on this match.
Okay.
Because I really liked like what they were doing with the like the spot with Wagner kind of doing like the mask, like the head move.
Yeah.
After the boot from from Jake.
I thought
that was good. And then him getting hit anyway and then going down. And I actually kind of bought that one as a finish.
Mm.
And then that didn't happen. And then I thought what they were doing after that was also still like pretty good. Like, I'm not going to say like it didn't quite get to like 4 stars for me, but I still really, really liked it. And the right outcome as well.
I think. That's funny. I gave it 4 stars, but I thought it was trending higher.
Okay, fair enough.
But like, I was just like, okay, like you put, and like, I don't know. I just thought they had an opening there to do something more. Mm-hmm. And like, this is sort of the thing with Jake is like, he sort of regressed in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably realizes that he's hit his like ceiling, right?
Yeah.
Well, so it's just probably he's just like, yeah, okay.
How many kicks does Jake throw in a match these days compared to like a couple years ago?
A lot.
I mean,
do you mean like, well, what kind of kick are we talking?
In general. I mean, he's got the big boot.
I was like, well, he does the big boot a lot. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, okay, if you're just talking.
And like, it has got that one high kick that he pulls out usually toward the end. But like, you go and you watch his absolute best matches against Kento.
Oh, yeah, no, he's kicking the shit out of Kento there.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's just what I expected out of Jake, and I'm not sure if this other stuff works for him as well. Well, it doesn't.
I mean, I guess maybe he's not doing it because he's in Noah, and he's like, well, there's like so many people in a promotion that are better at him at kicking.
Well, he's not bad. And I mean, Nakajima's gone.
Yeah, but you still have Kenno.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It just popped into my head just watching this, because I was like, okay, well, it's like, this is actually pretty good. I just think that, you know, Jake has done better and been in better matches, and it's just fascinating to me to like see how it sort of flatlines after like reaching a certain pretty good point. Like, I don't say that this match wasn't good, because it was, but it's just like then it like it's this ceiling, and then Jake can't go any further with it.
Yeah, no, that definitely seems to be because I mean, but I will say, I think a lot of his title defenses were better than this match.
I'm not sure about that. The only one that I would say that maybe for sure is the Sugera one. And that was when they were kicking the crap out of each other.
I really like the Marufuji one as well.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, this was the right choice, though, for Wagner.
Oh, no, absolutely. 100%. Yes.
And no challenger emerged.
Which is interesting as well.
Because we got to talk. Well, we'll talk about what that means in a bit, because it could be very interesting. But we got to go to Noah Monday Magic season 2 episode 1.
Hell yeah.
From April 1st in Shinjuku Face. Paul, they started this show off with a big deal. Nosawa comes out.
Yes.
To reveal Julia.
Mm-hmm.
To a big pop. And very fascinating. She says she's going to be on the May 4th Wrestle Magic show at Sumo Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it would appear that certain things are happening with Rossi's new promotion. And is it going to be the Serious Joshi company in Cyberfight?
Yes.
Do you think, or, I mean, Rossi technically has the money to go it alone.
But again, it was always weird to basically leave Bushiroad, who just, yes, he might have had his issues there, but again, he doesn't have, yes, he has money, but he doesn't have to put in his own money, right?
Yeah.
He can just have Bushiroad foot the bill. But obviously, if Cyberfight is coming in and it's like, well, we want to start a Joshi promotion and we're willing to give you like the same amount of money that Bushiroad is giving you to run Stardom, but we're going to be a lot more hands-off. Like, you can just kind of do your own thing.
Yeah, they will be. Look what they've allowed to happen.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Like, they're just like, yeah, you produce content for Abima. Cool. So this to me makes a lot more sense than him just going his own way.
Yeah. And if that's the case, then they will probably be able to make a pretty even bigger splash at the startup than people expected.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the other hand, though, then it is weird that like not that many people actually left.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I always felt like when like they actually announced how many people were leaving Stardom, or even before that, my thing was like, well, I don't think there's actually going to be that many people leaving, because if it is just Rossi running it himself, then I feel like a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm loyal to him. But once you actually look at like the money being offered, you probably would have been like, well, I would just rather stay in Stardom and earn more money. Whereas if it's Cyberfight actually like footing the bill, I feel like Rossi probably could offer more like competitive contracts. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like a lot of them actually like took them up on it. Who knows?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, more money was offered, so I mean, that's always the thing, right?
Yeah, Yeah, and I mean, we don't know who like who else is going to be a part of this. I mean, I assume like all of the other ones that like left Stardom, and then probably like Unagi or something.
Yeah. Well, and more will leave next year, I think.
Yes, I mean that might also be a thing. Like, if this actually gets off the ground and actually like is this, because that might be the other thing where people were like, okay, I would be in theory interested in leaving, but you don't actually have anything set up yet. So call me back next year when it's actually started.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that, but that's a big thing. So we'll have to see where that goes. Also, who's Giraffe Head?
Yeah, I have no idea what this is supposed to be.
So someone in a giraffe mask sent a video message, and I don't know what it's all about. So I just have felt like I had to touch on that.
What if it's Chris Brooks?
I don't know. It could be. That's funny, because it actually could be.
Yeah, so this time it could actually be Chris Brooks.
So we get to the show itself. Ahiro, Dr. Wagner Jr., and Luis Monte defeated Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf in 9:29 with the Vuelta finale from Wagner on Wolf. This rocked. This was just
From Monte.
From Monte. Yeah. This was basically like almost pure lucha.
Yeah.
Although I don't think they had the lucha tag rules in there though.
I'm trying to remember, but yeah, no, this rocked. This was This was really fun. This was like the perfect match to open like the season with as well. The crowd was super hot for her too. The only negative, Luis Monte's look. What the fuck was that? So I have talked to Mike Spears, and apparently this is not what he normally wears on Dragon Gate shows. I legitimately, at times when he came in the ring, I at first thought it was a fan running in.
That's funny. Yeah, so I guess a little historic because you got two Mexican world champions in Japan. Teaming together too.
Yeah, no, I think that's clearly what they were going for here. It was a really cool moment, and like all four men like were like seemed super motivated as well.
Yeah, yeah,
because they were like, yeah, this is special. It's like it was really, really cool to see this, like both of like Monte and Wagner coming out with the belts, and just a really cool moment. And I mean, exactly what you kind of have these shows for, right? Where you kind of like mix and match people and just have cool shit, basically.
Probably the best match on the show. But I actually have another one that I think got close. But we'll have to find out which one it is. Mm-hmm. It might surprise you.
Okay.
Next up, we had Kenta defeating Reho Iwa in 6:46 with the PFS. I mean, this was really good for what it was, but it was also way too short.
Yeah.
And it was like Iwa dominating and then like Kenta coming back and like being like, I'm coming for you, Kaido type thing.
Yeah. It was a very weird match structure, but it made sense for Iwa to lose here.
You give these guys 15, 20 minutes would be awesome.
Yes, exactly. Actually, you might switch this one around, but yeah.
Yeah. Next up, Nagisa Nozaki and Great Sakuya defeated Miyuki Takase and Nanashi in 9:29 with the moonsault press from Sakuya on Nanashi. Now, I've not seen Nanashi before, but Nanashi is like a zombie gimmick, basically. Mm-hmm. Not unlike, if you remember, Deep Cut, Konaka Pale One.
Oh, of course I remember Konaka. You mean Konaka equals Pale One.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes. So it's the same drawn out stuff with the Great Sakuya.
Yeah, this was shit. I'm just so over the Great Sakuya. It sucks. Like, the match that they did on the New Year's show was awful, and this wasn't much better. Doesn't work.
It's also sabotaging a great wrestler in Riko Kawahata.
Yes, that's the other thing. It's like, it's just... I don't get what we're going for. Like, okay, I get what we're going for here. We're going for female great Muda, but it doesn't work.
It's funny because if you go and you look at... This is like 2007 and 2008 great Muda. I mean, did 1992 great Muda do like the gimmicky stuff in the brawl? Yes. Well, no, what I was going to say the famous Hiroshi Hase great Muda match with the blood. Or something like, Muda did stop. Like, Muta did stalling and brawling and like attack people with ring bells and stuff, but it was also like not as over the top and like drawn out. But like when Muta was doing this in 2007, 2008, this is because he had no knees.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more like gimmicky and drawn out. Right. And so it's like, well, you have this young, great wrestler that's now doing this.
Yeah. She should do 92 Muta.
Yes.
Not 2023 Muta.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's sort of my issue with it. I did admit I laughed when they hit at the commentary table.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the highlight of the match.
Yeah. And then afterwards you had like Nanashi chase Takase to the backstage.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like this at all. It's just drags this. Like, otherwise I thought this was a really fun show, but this was just shit.
And we're going to get more of it. I'm somewhat surprised.
Yeah, actually.
I guess the big question was, were they going to bring Sakuya back? And they didn't.
Yeah.
So next up, Jake Lee, Yohei, and Tadasuke defeated Masa Kitamiya, Junta Miyawaka, and Yuo Wada in 8:44 when Yohei used the dropkick on Iwata. I mean, this was a good little sprint. But at the end of the day, not too much to it. But it was really just set up for after the match, some very familiar music hit. And Yankee 2 Genju came out to challenge Tadasuke and Yohei for the GHC Junior Tag Team titles, which will happen next week on Monday Magic. That's
appointment viewing.
That's going to be great. Appointment viewing. It is. Remember when Yuko Miyamoto was in M's Alliance, like for a cup of coffee?
Yeah. And then he literally like riffed on the fact that he kind of disappeared.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he was the jobber of the group.
And they cut like a promo and were like, yeah, we also don't know where Yuko Miyamoto is. He just kind of abandoned us.
Well, I probably didn't want to be the fall guy for a bunch of like big stars.
Old guys, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the younger ones, I think. He's like early 40s in that group.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that will be awesome. I have no doubt. Yes. That.
No, that's definitely going to rock. Like, do you think this? Do you think they're gonna do a title change?
I kind of hope not, actually.
I mean, I do really.
There's a lot you could do with Yankee 2 Genju too, though.
That's the thing, you know. Like as much as I like Yohei and Tadasuke, I also want to see more of Yankee 2 Genju in Noah.
Yeah.
Them versus the Golpadores. Like, oh yes.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You might, yeah, maybe you will just do it. I don't know. I wouldn't be against it, but at all. I just really like think that Yohei and Tadasuke have helped to elevate the status of those titles, though.
Yes, no, they are really good champions, and
yeah,
but still, you know, it's okay. Let's put it this way: we're in the great situation where there's actually no wrong like move here.
Yeah,
both yeah. Moves are actually good.
Definitely. And then we had Yoshinari Ogawa and Gedo versus Hayata and Ada went to a no contest. Gedo actually got a pretty big pop, and he's wearing a War Dog shirt.
I mean, that's came out to the War Dogs music as well.
Oh yes, yeah.
I actually at first when Gedo came out, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I was actually like, oh my god, are we gonna get David Finlay and Noah?
Honestly, I didn't hate this, even though it was, you know, because this was like, you know, Ada got some good heat and everything. So, you know what? It was fine for what it was, the little ghetto surprise.
Yeah. No, because they also, like, because this was actually a callback to the finale of the last season.
Yeah.
They did that match. They did that match with the same participants. There wasn't the same match. Like, I think it was okay. Gawa and Hayata versus Gedo and Eita, I don't remember. But it was the same four people, basically. And it also ended in a no contest as well. because of course it did. And this was much better than that. So I was actually surprised how much I was like, yeah, this actually wasn't a bad match. And then, but then after the match, well, basically the match ends when like Gedo just hits everyone with a chair.
Yep. Yeah, it was Hayden Yoshinori Ogawa defeating Aiden Gedo by DQ.
Okay. Whereas, and then Gedo basically was like, yeah, shake my hand. Like he hits like Ogawa and then he's like, yeah, shake my hand. And then Hayat and Ada do shake his hand, but then they attack him. But then Ogawa attacks everybody as well. And like, this feud has been going for like 3 years.
Yeah. And it's probably going to be the callback on like every season of Monday Magic. And then,
I mean, it was nice if it would only stick to that, but it's also just on Noah shows as well. Like, it's just,
well, a little less lately. If they just moved it to here, that would be fine, I suppose.
Then it would be contained to somewhere, not just constantly simmering for years.
And then in the main event, Kaito Kiyomiya defeated Uka Sasaki in 1643 with the modified Shining Wizard. Paul, I really like this match.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, well, okay, so here Sasaki was doing a lot more just traditional pro wrestling, and of course Kiyomiya is incredible, especially when you're leading through a much more inexperienced pro wrestler. So I thought this was by far and away the best Uka Sasaki match so far.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this was one of those reminders where it's just like, oh yeah, no, Kaito is just like one of the like best five wrestlers on the planet.
He is one of the best wrestlers on the planet, and I don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves for that because of everything.
Yeah. But he very much just like, yeah, as you said, he just let this guy that has like how many matches under his belt? Like less than 20, right?
Let's find out. Okay. Cage Match does have an Uka Sasaki profile.
Oh, he got
25 matches.
25 matches, okay. But still, like,
and he's been wrestling since November.
Yeah, exactly. And he got him to like a pretty good match.
Oh yeah.
Like I would like say like 3.5 or something like
that. And this was a lot less. I mean, Kaito's very good at mat work. Again, very underrated as well. But this wasn't a lot of like them lying around in submission holds towards like the end of the match either.
Yeah. No, I mean, if actually like, if Olga like wants to like continue doing like mat work or whatever, like I think learning from Kaito is like the perfect guy to learn from.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Because Kaito's really good at worked mat work.
Yeah.
So like he's like a guy like I would like orient myself on if I were him and just, you know, just kind of learn how to like actually make things look good without hurting the other person.
So yeah, that was Monday Magic. Mm-hmm. Season 2, Episode 1, and it was a great show. And
yes, I love this one. It was much fun.
So we were a little pessimistic on Noah last couple episodes because we thought things had turned around and then maybe they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm optimistic again.
Yes. Oh yeah. No. Now that the evil is defeated again, as in Jake isn't the champion.
The evil defeated. No more main event push for Fujita.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell. So that's like great. So the feeling has been restored.
Yes, yeah, for sure. The only weirdness, like in terms of like champions left for me, is like the Morris double title thing. But again, I suppose that wasn't still supposed to be the case.
No, that was not.
Not on Noah. I can't blame them for someone getting injured.
I'm just surprised they haven't announced that match yet.
I think they're trying to find where to put it in the schedule. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go and talk about what's coming up here. So next week, Shinjuku Face on the 8th, GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title, Yohei and Tadasuke versus Yuko Miyamoto and Asami Kodaka. Awesome. Looking forward. Yep. May the best team win, I suppose. You can't go wrong.
Nope. I think.
And then on April 11th, Corkin Hall, Kendo versus Kendo Kiyomiya and whatever bizarre stipulations there are in that one. Last night, Kotoge announced the next Limit Break show on April 26th at Yokohama Radiant Hall, which is interesting, but I suppose So we've got, for the world heavyweight title, Akitoshi Saito versus Satsuki Nagao, who's like the only sort of youngish wrestler that's in Real 01.
I mean, sure, why not? I mean, do we think Saito gets past him?
Yes. Because he was nothing even in 01.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got, this is interesting, Goshi Ozaki, Kazuyuki Fujita, and Muhammad Yone versus Shuji Ishikawa, Yuki Ino, and Yuki Onaya.
Mm-hmm.
That could be very good. We'll see how it pans out. We've got Atsushi Kotoge and Black Mensa Ray versus Jun Akiyama and Rukia.
Yeah.
That could be good.
Fun. Mm-hmm.
We got Hiroki versus Tetsuya Endo.
Okay. That's all right, because they're doing the whole... Wait, but when is the Extreme title match?
I don't know.
Because that's kind of weird, because Endo is also champion, so I don't know.
Yeah, there's no way that they're going to have Hiroki beat Endo.
Yeah.
And then, Uwada. Paul, have you seen this match?
No.
Uwada versus, drum roll please, Yoshitatsu.
What the fuck? Why?
I don't know.
I mean, it's, as long as he sticks to like the limit break shows, like, really hope this doesn't mean he comes into Noah proper.
It would be so funny if he found a way to.
Yeah, well, like Shuji Ishikawa's like, yeah, sorry, I can't work limit break shows anymore because I'm doing DDT and then I'm going back to All Japan. But I have Yoshitatsu.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I feel his departure was actually different than everybody else's.
Oh, yeah, no, that was like building up for a long time because he just got dropped out for like a year and a half.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, May 4th, Sumo Hall, Wrestle Magic. Mm-hmm. So all we know so far is Julia will be at the show, wrestling on the show. And that will be actually an extra pay-per-view on Wrestle Universe.
Yeah. I think you get like a discount if you were like a subscriber before point.
It's if you're a subscriber, it's like 3,400 yen. And if you're not, it's 3,800 yen.
Yeah. Which I guess it's something.
It's something. How much 400 is 400 yen? Yeah, 400 yen these days.
Because I still make the mistake of applying the 1-to-100 conversion. So it's like, I don't know, €2.50 probably.
Yeah. Yeah, these days this might exactly be like right bang on $4 Canadian.
Oh God, wait, I can put the Canadian dollars now in the 1-to-100.
It might actually be.
Oh, that's bad.
Oh yeah, it almost is. It's at 0.9.
Ooh, that's rough. Given the fact that I literally have a phone that was bought for me by a friend in Canada because I made use of the exchange rate.
And then also last night, Noah announced two shows. On Sunday, June 16th, they're running Yokohama Buntai. And on Saturday, July 13th, they're going Nippon Budokan.
Okay.
That's
really ambitious. That is very.
Plus Sumo Hall in May.
Yeah. Is that going to be a mystery show, basically? Like, I guess they're going to announce, like, because they already announced, like, Julia. I guess they're going to announce people, but will we actually get a card for that?
That's too risky. You can't do that.
You can't do that. It would be insane, but it's also insane to then run Yokohama Buntai a month later and then run Nippon Budokan a month after that.
Well, okay, so is like how much longer is Wagner going to be champion? Because you could say he's only main eventing Korakin.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't put him in the Yokohama Budokan main event.
Yeah, there's no way he's walking into the Budokan.
He's actually pretty over, though. I'll give him that.
He is. And he did draw a good house in Korakin.
Yeah, although I've seen people say that, like, Jake is a good draw in Korakin, which maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, if anywhere, that would be the place.
Decent draw in Sapporo as well, I guess.
So, But there's no way they're going to put Wagner in the main event of Budokan, though.
No, no, there's no, unless he like faces like a big star and loses the title.
Well, who? He's facing Kaito. In Korakuen, Kaito or Go?
Go, maybe.
Marufuji, you're running low on big names.
Yeah, so I feel like he's no longer going to be champion by the time that show comes around.
Yeah, but then who is?
Like, Kaito.
Who is, you think so? You think it's too soon? You think he could benefit from a little more rehab? I mean, I think they're rehabbing him pretty well.
Yeah, they are rehabbing him pretty well now, but like, who else are you going to put it on?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right? Like, you just took it off Ken. Like, if Kenno was still champion, like, this would make sense. I mean, maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's just the plan, is just put it back on Kenno. Because this was a, like, contractually stipulated reign that Wagner got for extending his contract. And they're just putting it back on Kenno.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenno, I can totally see as, like, the guy on top for, like, these level of shows.
Yeah. Yeah, Kaito makes sense. Go, maybe. I still am adhering to my theory that Team Noah was just a way to stick Go in the mid-card.
Yes. No, I think Go is kind of like done as like a big main eventer. I don't think he's winning the title again.
Oh, never again, eh?
I think he's getting title challenges. And maybe he gets one more short reign. But he's not going to be like a big long-term top guy.
Yeah, that's a shame. I wish he could have gotten that in under better circumstances.
Yeah,
you know, he finally broke the curse, and
it's weird how he like it's right at the. I mean, he still got a good reign in, like, right? It's just the bad part is that it was during the pandemic, and then his body broke down right after.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just like there's, but again, I mean, it's Noah. You can't. Right off, they're going to use New Japan guys. They're going to pay for big name foreigners.
Might also happen, yeah. Right? But who do you even bring in as like a big name foreigner that would be a draw for this level of show?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because it's the Nippon Budokan. You can't just like... I mean, if there's... I don't know how that would work out timing-wise and for like other stuff. But if you just want to bring in someone that you know could draw as like a big international guy that also would be totally up for like wrestling in a Nippon Budokan, Danielson.
Yeah. Yeah. He has though, hasn't he?
Has he?
He probably has on some Noah show.
Yeah, but again, if in not, an not actual like big meaningful match, like he has definitely worked it, but it's not as like you can like that's a title match you can like basically put on against anyone. Okay, let's see. He has five matches in Budokan.
Yeah.
And like they're all tag matches.
Yeah, of course. We gotta get Danielson in Fuchi's retirement match.
Yeah, you just get him into like all of the like old guys basically.
Oh, he loves Fuchi though.
Oh yeah, no, of course he does. You just so need to watch him wrestle.
Yeah, that's why he should be in that one.
Okay, but the downside of that is that Fuchi or that doesn't work though, because Fuchi will never retire.
Maybe not. So yeah, I mean, this is pretty, I don't even know where they're going with this.
Yeah, it's don't know what they have planned.
And it's funny because it's like you could like keep your head down and doing what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And build things back up. And they're doing that well. I mean, the only negative thing, the only real negative thing in the last couple of months was the Fujita versus Jake thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really say there was anything else that was really bad. And other things like the Yokohama Budokan main event was just beyond their control. It was an injury.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you start introducing these big shows, you're going to do something for a cheap, you know, just to pop the house without regards for longer term, which is, again, the problem that Noah faced once Muto retired.
I'm wondering if, like, the person that is booking the buildings and the person that is booking the shows,
mm-hmm.
don't aren't the same person and aren't really communicating well.
It'd be kind of crazy if it isn't, but
yeah, because in Japan that normally is the same person. Yeah.
Yeah, or at least aware of it, there's more communication. Like,
yeah, because it doesn't really feel like, I think, like I was saying, like they're doing a really good job of like building stuff up, but they're building stuff up pretty slowly, which is the right thing to do. But it's, you have like massive shows coming up in like very, very quickly, and it doesn't really feel like they have all that many like hot storylines going in that they can peek at those shows.
Well, I mean, you're doing Kenno versus Kaito at Korakuen.
Yeah, but again, you're doing that in Korakuen, and one of the outcomes might be that their feud is done.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess you can do some sort of angle where like you get out of that, or like this, like a no contest or something like that happens, and like that sets up something for those shows as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's weird that you're just doing that in Korakuen with like this big of like a stipulation.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of makes me think that there's an angle coming.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, yeah, I don't know where this is going to go. And I hope they don't do anything stupid or short sighted.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I think.
For now, I will be like, yeah, I'm just going to enjoy what Noah's going to do. And then, yeah, I have no fucking clue what they're going to do for these big shows.
Yeah. Oh, right. I think that's it. Unless you have any final closing thoughts, because a lot has happened in a week.
No, not nothing right now. My brain is starting to go towards empty right now.
All right. So at this point, given all that's happening, I don't think we're going to be back until like the carnival has started.
Yeah, probably not, which is, I don't remember what date that is, but yes.
The 18th.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how the Yuma Enzai era goes, and we are going to follow it every step of the way. So for Paul, I'm Gerard, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Take care. Bye.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne. In every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.